the 5-8-104's fastest growing podcast. It's the legend. And the loudmouth.
Time, anywhere you are and by whatever method you are listening and socially distancing, we thank you for choosing this podcast. And Grant, a lot of guys signing on the dotted line last few days.
I played with one of them.
And we'll talk about them all here on the show. A little Richard Marx to get the show started for you. A highly underrated song, I might say, Don't Mean Nothing. And it don't mean nothing until you sign it on the dotted line. At least the fax machine has apparently gone away, apparently,
right.
Now. It used to be that the only reason these athletic departments existed was to have a fax machine on signing day, because it had to go through via fax. And now in the COVID era and everything, I think you finally I think the fax machine circa 2019 has finally served any useful purpose that it may. I think it's over.
I think it was just, you know, hit the check mark on the tablet.
Yeah,
sign here or not.
I think that's the way it goes. But 24 young men signing up to be members of the Bison. We will talk about them tonight.
And they should leave before national championship, right?
We've got a busy weekend of college football to talk about. We'll get to the recruiting class. We'll get to the college football playoff. We'll get to conference championship games. We've got a very busy NFL slate this weekend. Bye weeks are all done, and it's a 3-week sprint to the finish now. So a lot to talk about, but let's take a look, Grant. I guess overall, this is probably, in terms of importance of football weekend, not only for the games going on this weekend and coming up, but to build the next 4 years of programs for teams.
Right.
And with this early signing period, a little strange this year because of COVID. You got guys that haven't been on the campus. You've got people that have never even physically one-on-one talked to a head coach. And yet, a lot of these guys are making life-changing decisions. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it's more... I'm more interested with the kids that aren't from North Dakota. Like, there's a kid... There's a safety from Frisco the Bison guy. I wonder why he wanted to do an NDS.
Well, apparently the story with that guy is he was holding the flag during the national anthem
a year ago,
right? Is that what I heard?
Correct.
So that's pretty crazy. And, of course, Braylon Henderson on the roster now. And so it's going to be crazy that some of these kids who have never, you know, been on campus but seen the Bison up close and personal.
And that's the advantage of being in the championship game every year.
Right?
Kids like that, they see you. They see the national pedigree that you have. If they can watch a local game on the edition,
right?
They can watch it. They can watch the team that they might sign with play with those kind of.
Well, let's talk about this group of Bison, and I want to start with a guy because this is the only chance, you know, one of the only chances I ever get to ask this question on a podcast, but. One of your teammates, Truman Wehrmeyer, is a signee of NDSU, and I know you have said that often that you don't want to hit Truman.
He's the one guy in practice I do not want to block.
Yeah.
He's the one, because he would knock me on my ass.
Yep.
Even though he's taller, but I'm rolling on me.
And congratulations to Coach Wayne and his wife Amy, Truman's mom and dad. Great people.
Yeah.
Truman will fit in very well in this offense.
Right.
Not only going to play fullback, and become the next Jedry Sear or Brock Robbins or whoever, or Hunter Lubke. A long tradition of Marty C., a long tradition of great fullbacks that have gone to NDSU. And of course, Tyler Jangula. There's so many of these guys that have been great fullbacks, and Truman's going to do well, so congratulations to him. Grant, I know that, again, some of these kids you've played against or at least had the chance to see up close in person. So
Barica Pena is the main other one.
Let's talk about the North Dakota kids, and let's talk about Barica Kapinu. this guy's the real deal. And having seen him up, he is fleet of foot and certainly has that sort of kind of Ty Brooks type speed that you're looking for in a guy like that.
Yeah, I remember we're playing Cheyenne and we were mocking that he's the only good guy on their team. Well, he cooked us that night. So it was more of, you hate the guy when you play against him, but God, do you want to have him on your team. He's just so athletic and dynamic.
Yeah, 2,600 plus right. rushing yards, 29 touchdowns, and 310 carries. Catches the ball well out of the backfield, which is also, again, an underrated skill for this Bison offense. But also a track guy, also plays basketball. You know, he had 1,052 yards in 9 games, and quick math tells me that's well over 100 yards a game. So going to be fun to watch him. The other guys that you've seen up close, his teammate Cole Menz, who's a defensive end, he's going to be good. His dad was an NDSU guy too, so it'll be fun to watch him. Anik Sibomana from Fargo South, he of the pink shoes,
yeah.
You know, just one of those guys that can play everything. Played safety, I think that might be where they slot him in here.
He's tall.
Well, he's 5'10". I think he's just long.
He's long, yeah. That's the better phrase, yeah. He just looked really tall to me. He was really just 5'10".
Yeah, but he's long. And the other thing that I think with him, too, that he can do is he is dynamic on special teams. 50 yards per kickoff return led the EDC.
He'd be battling Kobe Johnson back then.
That's going to be some interesting speed. A couple of bigger guys out of the West. Jackson Duttenheffer, who's one of my favorite names just to say, but he's a Mandan guy, and you guys played against them in the state playoffs as well.
Yeah.
Actually goes back to his dad played for Dickinson State on the national semifinal team way back in the day. But
national semi.
Well, I mean, that's pretty good for NAIA. He was also the MVP of the American Legion baseball team. Can you imagine pitching to a guy who's 275 and can hit?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a little dangerous. So don't raise your hand. The other guy from the North Dakota side is Jack Steckler from Bismarck. And he's going to be your next, you know, massive tight end.
Good.
6'5", 208. Once he gets Kramerized, probably looking at playing in that 230 to 240 range.
Yeah.
Also ran the ball a little bit. So he is absolute, and he's also a golfer. First team All-State hockey guy, so you know you got to be tough to play some hockey.
He plays 3 sports.
So that's pretty good. Minnesota guys. My favorite name of the whole class is Finn Diggins, ladies and gentlemen, of Perham. And again, he's going to be the Ben Ellefson type tight end. So you got these two massive individuals now going to play tight end. I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. But doesn't it show just how the Bison are talented because they recruit really well? I mean, it just shows you, like, oh, why are they so good? Because they recruit guys. And plus, the advantage, they're in a rural area.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a lot of farm kids. You're going to get a lot of really talented football players.
And you know where it shows up the most is in these tight end position.
Yeah.
Tight end, offensive line, and defensive line.
Yeah.
But this is, again, the typical kid, you know, Detroit Lakes, Perham, Becker.
Beach, Balfour.
Yeah, these small Minnesota towns and these small North Dakota towns. You look at, like, the Veldman kid who was 6'7", and just a giant out there in the – And the Bison, of course, got another Becker kid in Braden Weber, this time on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of wrestling guys in this crew, too. And I've always thought the wrestling guys are so good when they play in these kind of positions because they understand body position and leverage.
Body control, right?
Yeah, and it makes you so much of a better player.
I hate that phrase.
Sam Henry, the offensive lineman from Eden Prairie, big dude. Eden Prairie and Mike Grant, one of the premier programs in Minnesota. He is going to be fun to watch, develop. A couple other skill position guys we want to talk about that came from there. Eli Green from Lakeville and Farmington, kind of your slot wide receiver, a little bit bigger, but at 5'11", but definitely going to be somebody to watch. But, of course, we all know the biggest wide receiver we got came out of a town called Marshall and has the last name of Lance.
Right.
And Bryce Lance he didn't just show up by default.
No, how tall is he again?
So Lance comes in at 6'2", 165.
Right, we're like 210.
Well, he'll buff out, but right. It'll be interesting to watch because he will be, you know, again, the Bison are going to line up in a couple of years with Christian Watson, Phoenix Sproles, and Bryce Lance at wide receiver.
Oh my God, that's scary.
And And throwing it to him is going to be the guy who everybody wanted in this class, who is the top choice by far and away. The premier recruit of this class, I would argue, is Cole Payton.
Right.
And Cole Payton, a 6'2", 218 freshman, obviously going to be a freshman, duh, Omaha. He's from Westside High.
Westside.
Undefeated senior season. You know, absolute D1 potential. Nebraska, the state of Nebraska folks have said they should have never let a kid like this get out of there.
When you get last night national championships, you're going to get somebody like that.
So good to see him on board.
He had offers from Dartmouth, Illinois State, Northern Iowa, and South Dakota as well.
That's.
I think he had other ones, but
I'm sure he had a few other ones.
The Jacks offered him too at one point.
Ivy League is pretty attractive too.
Nebraska wanted him and all that.
I thought Iowa was in the mix on that too.
I think Northern Illinois wanted him too, but it's like you're not going to Northern Illinois.
I would almost argue that going to a MAC school is a downgrade.
I'd rather go to NDSU more than a MAC conference.
Let's mention some of the other ones here. Cam Devine, the running back from Wisconsin, he's exciting. I think he played safety, played fullback. He did it all. He's one of those guys that he just does it all. And, of course, the running back depth, taking a little bit of a hit with Sabian Clark leaving, Adam Cofield leaving. But now you've got a Cam Devine. And he... not in the Kobe Johnson, Jalen Bussey mode of kind of the lighter guy. This is a more of a guy who's kind of built.
I like Cofield. He's really slow. But the only thing I didn't like about him is he lacked the speed, and these guys are fast.
Yeah, and Cam, he can certainly motor from what I can tell of the tape. Alex Ochsner, I'm not pronouncing that right, but Catholic Memorial in Waukesha, it's a well-known high school with Bill Young, who's a legendary coach in Wisconsin. He has got a track speed you want. He's in the 4x1, 4x2, and 4x4 relay guy. You know, all conference defensive back. He can play wideout, and of course, it's always good when you got those guys that play both wideout and corner.
Yeah,
they have that skill set to flip either on either side of the ball.
Right, so that'll be fun to watch. I suppose like Ty Satter.
Yeah, similar.
Went my freshman year when I was at Davies. He was a senior and he played both ways and he's pretty damn good at it.
Right. Caden Warren's the other big one, big D tackle from Rice Lake. He's 6'4", 250. He'll get up to that 280, 290. Another wrestling guy, 220-pound wrestling champ. Again, I'm telling you, these wrestlers, they have got a lot of these type of skills. Cody Hoosman from Iowa, from Pella. Same thing, another wrestler. Blake Satter, A.J. Blazek is really excited about this kid from Council Bluffs. He is a massive dude.
Iowa.
From Council Bluffs, Iowa. That's right. Smart kid, too, and fun to watch. Again, a guy who played a lot of defensive tackle but projects out to be offensive. The big safety you were living about is Reggie King out of Grandview.
Reggie King.
And Reggie is a big dude. He is 6'3".
Yeah,
and
safety.
He is a all-state first-team defensive back in Missouri. Certainly with St. Louis, Kansas City, there's certainly some depth in there.
Yeah.
To be in there. State champ in basketball and track, second place in the state 800 meters. Rangy is the word that comes to mind when you have a kid of that size.
Right, The Buys always know how to get really good safeties. Hendricks, Grimsley, and Tutsi. There are a lot of great safeties that have come through this program.
Yeah.
And he can be another one of them. He's big. And if you can get tall guys in your secondary, then that's just deadly.
Rangy guys. Right. Logan Kopp also qualifies for that. He's the linebacker from St. Louis out of Lindbergh High School.
They're always talking about the Missouri area.
Yeah. No, that's well, and they had developed some in that area, and I think this was a nice get for them, too. They were really excited about. And he wants to be an engineer, which definitely is a good way to get you going. Underrated signing in this class. They signed the long snapper.
Right.
From Illinois. Mike
Ross Kenley's time is ending. So
yeah, Mike Florentine is going to be the guy that's going to take. And they wanted, and then specifically mentioned this, that Ross Kenley's graduation coming
Kenley.
Up. They want to have a long snapper ready to roll. And,
right.
You know, who was, I'm blanking on his name, who was before Ross? Was the James Fisher?
James Fisher, yeah. James Fisher will snap.
Yep, yeah, James Fisher, who got went to a few NFL camps.
He was good.
And it was such a position of reliability for them. And then, you know, Kenley has taken it over and done a good job. Now they got to get the next one, and so that don't underestimate how important a signing that is to get a long snapper.
Right.
You don't want to just convert some guy. He's coming in knowing that's what he needs to do, and I think that's great.
I mean, Jared Allen was a long snapper.
Right. Right. He needed all right.
Yeah,
for himself.
He was okay.
Braden Rucker is the Kansas kid, Eureka High School. He's going to be offensive line again once he gets a little more Kramerized. He's going to be a big dude. You mentioned the kid from Frisco, Ryan Jones,
who is
Reedy High School in Frisco. Again, it was on the field for that national title game here. And again, another big guy at 6'3". And these safeties, they may project a corner. We don't know yet. But speaking of corners, they went into North Cobb High School in Kennethall. Got a guy right in Kennesaw's backyard in Nasir Howell, who is actually going to be up here for the winters, the season in 2021. However, he is not eligible to play, but he's going to be here and be in the system and get Kramerized.
Right.
A 6'1 corner, gotta love that.
But doesn't that tell you how much pedigree matters? Because if I'm Kennesaw, you must have pressed hard to get this kid. The Bisons will take him out of your own backyard.
Yeah, well, I wonder if Kobe, having Kobe on
the
Georgia kids now start that pipeline.
Yep.
Same with Britton Pasco, who's the corner from Florida.
Right.
And, you know, he got hurt his senior year, but he is a dynamic football player from Bloomingdale High School, which is in Apollo Beach, Florida. And that, I think it was Atif Austin, who was on the staff, kind of got that pipeline down to Florida.
Right.
A lot of good guys. Josh Hayes has come out of Florida. We all remember.
A lot of good Florida kids.
We all remember this certain guy named Bruce Anderson from Ruskin, Florida, I think it was. So there's certainly
Trey Dempsey's from Florida. I mean, there's a lot of good
guys. With his excitable father Leo.
He was one-handed interception. You know.
So all these Florida guys have made a difference, and it gets noticed.
Yeah. Right.
So I'm excited about this class, and again, everybody's excited about every recruiting class. But I like the depth. It's very even, offensive and defensive. But I think you got Peyton. That's your big stud dude.
Yep.
You got Lance, which you kind of needed to get.
Yeah.
As you
can't have one without the other.
Right. Those are kind of your two big wins on this class, I think, for the Bison overall. I haven't heard a lot. There were some North Dakota kids that UND got, Trey Feeney being one of them.
Who cares?
Kevin Feeney, run the option.
I think we watched that news footage, and eventually Kevin's sitting there like, what am I doing here, and why am I wearing this?
But I think it also illustrates the difference in what teams at NDSU's competition level are looking for. Feeney's a nice quarterback. He'll do fine in UND.
But he'll be 0-for-4 against the Bison.
It's the difference between the best athlete in Nebraska and the a top 10 quarterback, maybe in Minnesota, maybe. Night and day. And nothing against Trey Feeney.
But Easton Stick's also from that Nebraska area.
Yeah, it's a whole different level of athlete.
Right.
And I think to run NDSU's offense and succeed, I don't think there's any doubt the next year with Zeb at the helm is going to be different.
It's going to be more pass off, more pass, just your typical I formation offense and the pass off of it.
Well, but the 23 version of this offense is going to be scary good.
Oh, God, yeah.
When all these guys get on board and have a little time under their belt. I think it's going to be tremendous to watch. They don't show any signs of slowing down anytime soon,
right?
in these games. And we've got, you know, 2 months until February 21st in Youngstown. I think the Bison are well positioned now to take a little downtime here and on the holidays. And then when we get into January and start talking about NFL playoffs, we're going to start talking about the FCS training camp 2.0.
Right. Spring camp, I should
say. Yeah, well, winter camp or whatever you call it.
I call it spring.
It's going to be what's up.
It says spring ball, it's spring camp. I mean, we're going right into it.
Right.
Going to
be
fun. Who do we open up with?
Youngstown.
Right.
Will be the
Youngstown at home.
Youngstown at home. Youngstown at home will be the opener. So, a lot of interesting things to look at.
Talking about Bison football. Yeah, last year we were watching that real sports piece on, you know, but I think Goldberg said a good line.
Bernard Goldberg.
Right. And he said something along the lines of, you know, ticket prices are going to go back up. Do you think, because last year in the quarters, only 14,000 people showed up to that playoff game against Illinois State. It was 9-3. Then the stadium was packed the next week against Montana State. Do you think there'll be a sellout at the Dome for every home game?
I think, and I'll tell you why, because I don't think we'll be all the way through COVID yet
by the time that hits. But what do you think for the home opener? There would be at least once COVID's over, we're assuming COVID's on its way down by the time season starts.
And I don't know if, honestly, I don't know if this whole year there will be a full stadium because of that. I just don't.
But, how many tickets they sell, what do you think they'll all be sold?
No.
No. Why not?
COVID.
Do you think that could stop us from going to a game?
No, but what I'm telling you is that this year is the wrong year to measure it. I think the 21 season is the February through May season. The second 21 season, right, as it were,
right,
will be when you see full domes again, because that's the traditional football season, and that will be pent up demand coming back. Now, if they win two more titles, and I guess we're going to win two titles in 21, if that's the case.
Right.
I guess the other one will be in 22, technically speaking. But right, I think there'll be that pent-up demand, like, oh, if you think about it, the last Bison football game we went to in person was the semifinal over Montana State in December of 2019. And so that, a year ago, almost to the day, because I believe the Georgia Southern anniversary was yesterday or today is the anniversary of that. 10-11, was that an 11?
Which one?
2010, the 35-7 win over Georgia Southern? Okay, right. So that's a decade ago now?
Right.
Okay. So I think the fans will come back, but I don't think it's going to be until the end of 21.
Okay.
I think then you will have a full stadium. Let's see how it goes in 22. I think after the pent-up demand of not being able to go to games after a while, and Bison fans will be like, oh, we miss it, we miss the tailgating, they'll be back for 21, the fall 21 season.
Right.
I don't know if fall 22 will be the testing point, because then we'll be...
That's where I think my Bison fans might get too bored with winning.
Well,
I'm tired of the phrase of, we're tired of winning. I'm never tired of winning. I want them to win every week.
Right, and we need to have a longer discussion on this show at some point about, is it too boring? And that's the point that dipshit McFeely makes in his columns on a regular basis, is that I'm bored. I'm bored with Bison winning. I'm bored with going to Terre Haute. I'm bored with going to Youngstown. I want something else to write about. Hey, NDSU, why don't you go D1 and play Hawaii and Boise so I can go to some more fun places? I don't give a shit about that
stuff. I think McCoy's speaking on behalf of the entire NCAA and the FCS level. Morty's talking about the Bison. It's just like, it's annoying.
Self-interested newspaper columnists don't do much for me in terms of that. Now, does it make sense for NDSU to have conversations about it? Yes.
Should they do it? No.
First of all, they shouldn't even consider doing it until the indoor practice facility is done, because that has to be part of it.
Yep.
Second of all...
When is it being completed?
Well, let's say it's 2022.
Okay. Roughly. Have they broke ground on it?
No.
No.
So, 22, 23, it's done.
Have they broke ground on it?
When they open the Carson Wentz Center, we'll all know.
Oh, really? That's what it's
Well, I don't know.
It should be.
Well, let me take an educated guess on who contributed the money.
The Wentz family.
Well, who knows? But all in all, if you look at where Bison football is heading, and it isn't because Coastal Carolina is ranked number 9 or any of this other stupid shit.
Why did we go?
Okay, it comes down again to the position, and again, we'll get into this far more this winter. Does NDSU want to go into the Mountain West, go 9-2, and play in the Pizza Hut Bowl?
Right.
Is that good enough? Does that get Joe Bag of Donuts excited about NDSU football?
That doesn't get me excited.
To me, it doesn't.
I think the Bison lose recruiting advantage if they do go to FBS.
Doesn't playing for a championship mean something?
Yes. You think Cole Payton's going here if the Bison are an FBS school? I think he's going to Nebraska more than he's going to NDSU.
I just don't think the power of a championship... Don't ever underestimate the power of a champion, said Rudy Tepjanovich. Don't underestimate how valuable that is. And the problem is the Bison have made it look so easy.
Easy, yeah.
It's not that easy.
It's not, correct.
Ask JMU how easy it is.
They got one.
They've got one.
And they had to work damn hard to
get it. And it rightly deserved, and we will never hear the end of that. Oh, 2016, we got you. great.
Yeah, what about the other 8 times? Two of them against you.
It's not that easy.
No.
And
they just make it look
easy. The Bison have just, again, they've done 3 things that nobody else is willing to do. Number one, they have a style of offense that travels anywhere.
And number two, why hasn't we tried to replicate it? Only JMU's tried, and even they can't do it consistently.
Right, but they can't recruit, and they've recruited. The number two thing is they recruit to that offensive system and have a game plan, whereas other systems, even through different head coaches, change, they evolve. Look at Eastern Washington. They tried to sling it all over the yard. And then they tried to go to a different style of offense, and it just doesn't. It takes time.
It worked 1 year, and they got to a title game.
It takes time, though, for that to evolve and be a consistent part of your culture. The Bison haven't done it any differently in really since Craig Bohl took over.
Right.
And even before that, there was consistency in the approach. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play defense.
Strong defense.
We're gonna recruit to our strengths.
Right.
And for all the reasons we just talked about with this group of kids, it's all about recruiting to your strengths and not trying to be someone you are not.
Right.
And that's what number three success is trying not to be something that you can't be. We are not a 5 wide receiver, spread it out, throw it all over the yard team, even though we play in a dome.
Right.
The system we play, both offensively and defensively, travels everywhere, and there's nothing really like it in college football at this level.
Right. It's like, I've heard classic football with dome teams are soft. The Bison is the opposite of soft. If you go into the dome, you're getting beat by 30-plus points. It's just the way they play football, and you've seen it for over 30 years. I've seen it for 15. The way they've managed to run the ball so damn well. And when you see they have over 600 yards of total offense in the game, 400 yards of it's on the ground.
Right, and these aren't against low level FCS. These are the elite FCS.
Against South Dakota State, they're still running for 400 yards a game. But in most offenses in FCS football, if you have 600 yards of total offense, 400 of it's from the quarterback. It's the complete opposite with the Bison. Easton Stick may have thrown 16 passes in a game, 185 yards and 3 touchdowns, and then Bruce Anderson would have 250 yards rushing, and then somebody else in the back would have another 100. They're so consistent with the way they run the ball and the way they throw it makes it look better. It's like with what the Vikings do. It's more run, and then play action. When the Bison run play action, you're screwed. Because the way their top-flight receivers are, you can't defend it.
More to come in the coming week, in the weeks on FCS and the Bison role in everything.
Right.
As far as that's concerned. But we must move on to the big boy college football games of the week, and we have many of them, so let's start it off. Conference title mania this weekend. We got Conference USA, the Pac-12, Big Ten, Big 12, Sun Belt, MAC. We've got the Mountain West, the AAC, and the SEC. The jewel of them all.
My granddaddy
of them all. So let's start and go through each of the title games. Then we'll talk about the rankings and where we've got some ideas on whether these things are going to happen. Let's start with the Friday night games. UAB against Marshall in the Conference USA title game. Marshall, a 4.5-point favorite. Neither of these teams is that great.
I don't care. Just take a team that's ranked higher. I'll take Marshall.
Marshall, a slight favorite. I'll take Marshall -4.5. Friday night, Pac-12. Washington had the COVID in the Rona, so they are out. In comes Oregon.
Oregon's defending Pac-12 champion, Oregon.
Who got beat by Oregon State. Do I look like a beaver?
In the Highlighter Bowl.
Yeah, and also lost to California, I believe it was.
City of Compton.
Because the band is on the field or something like that.
Right, right.
USC, a 3-point favorite. Based on what I saw of Oregon, what?
That's what they do at USC.
Oh, you're doing that. Yeah, there we go. USC has been able to survive by the skin of their teeth. I don't consider them a worthy team in this game. I think they'll beat Oregon. I don't think Oregon's very good.
Nope, they aren't. So Oregon goes through sports where they just suck, and this is one of those.
Well,
games.
They did it in Corvallis against the Beavers, and I think it's probably going to happen again here coming up. So we're both on the Trojans and taking the 3 points in that one. Big Ten, Northwestern, great story, but Sorry, Grant's favorite part. Right. Great story, however, don't, and again, I get the Reese Davis thing and the disrespect angle and all that.
They're not
that
better
stuff.
Than Ohio State when it boils down to it. Right. So let's just move on.
Yeah.
Ohio State's going to
win
this
State
game.
Is a 20-point favorite. They will win, and they will cover in this game in Indianapolis.
Yep.
I don't think there's any question they're going to win it. And I think they're going to go 6-0 and go to the national playoff, but more on that to come. Oklahoma, a 5.5-point favorite over Iowa State. Oklahoma. And this is about the right, I think, seeding here. Iowa State does have a win over them earlier. I'm not sure Iowa State can duplicate.
That's a close one.
I'm not sure Iowa State can duplicate that.
If Iowa State wins, I wouldn't be surprised. If Oklahoma won, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this either team to me, if they won this game, doesn't shock me.
Honestly, I'm inclined to take Iowa State because I'm getting the points.
Right.
But this to me is a complete coin flip game.
I think Oklahoma's finally calming themselves down that we are a good football team, regardless of the 1-2 start.
Well, and I think they're both very well coached teams. You know, we've talked about Lincoln Riley and
Matt Campbell might be on his way
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and Matt Campbell it probably, you know. You would think a more prestigious job, and nothing against Iowa State, is probably on his radar.
Or the NFL, for God's sake.
It could be there, and there's certainly going to be some head coaching vacancies there. So we'll take Iowa State. I'm going to take Iowa State plus the 5.5.
I will, but if Oklahoma State somehow... if Oklahoma got under that, it wouldn't be surprised.
No, not a surprise.
Iowa State won by a field goal, no shock there.
Mac, Ball State against Buffalo. The Buffalo kid, the running back.
Buffalo ran the ball really well.
And Ball State, a 13.5-point underdog.
No.
The line says City. Buffalo by 13.5. Sagarin says they're a 9-point favorite. I'll take the Buffalo Bison.
Yeah, right.
In that one. Mountain West, Boise, your boys.
No, stop there, Boise.
Boise's a 6.5-point favorite. San Jose State, who has been a program that has sucked for a number of years.
That's an understatement.
Is actually ranked 24th in the AP poll, but they are an underdog. 6.5 is about the right amount. Boise probably just has more depth, and I think they'll probably win this game. In the AC, which is the American Athletic, for those of you scoring at home.
Yep.
Tulsa up against Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has not played a game in a month.
If Cincy wins, they're the highest ranked
group of five, and they certainly will have the resume.
Their defense is outstanding.
Well, but Central Florida almost beat them. I don't think they're that outstanding. I think Tulsa's going to give them a game. I actually think the line on this being 14.5 is a little large. I would take Tulsa plus the 14.5 just for the rust factor alone.
Right.
I still think Cincinnati will win.
Yep.
But I think it'll be in that one touchdown range in that one.
Okay.
Alabama. The Crimson Tide come in as a 17-point favorite in the SEC title game over Florida, based on Florida's performance. Not being able to stop an LSU team that hung 37 on them with a freshman QB and mediocre offensive talent.
Right.
I think Alabama could light the scoreboard up and then some against Florida. I'd take Alabama to cover minus 17 all day.
Yeah, I will too.
From that standpoint.
Are we talking scenarios after these?
That was the intent, okay, but we have to get to the last conference championship game. Fight on, Cajuns, baby. Fight on, Cajuns. Louisiana at Coastal.
For the belt.
The fraudulent Roosters are 3-point favorites.
It's a rooster.
The fraudulent Roosters, a 3-point favorite against the Raging Cajuns. This has actually got to be, by the way, the best nickname game. The Raging Cajuns against the Chanticleers. Can't be a better nickname game than this.
But doesn't that tell you how fraudulent they are when they're a 3-point favorite over Louisiana?
Taking Louisiana and the points.
Yep.
But I'm calling for the outright win for Louisiana.
Yep, that's why.
Let's go, Raging Cajuns. Again, shout out to the Louisiana Athletic Department. If they win this game, my shirt order is on the way on Saturday night.
No, it's not.
For the five extra large Raging Cajuns t-shirt. And I will wear it with pride every time I talk about Coastal Carolina. From here on out, the fraudulent Roosters going down to my Raging Cajuns. Anyway.
Our Raging Cajuns.
That's going to be the key there. Now, as tradition on the show, there is we were technically supposed to be in bowl season starting this week. We were supposed to have the Frisco Bowl.
But there wasn't one.
With UTSA. But apparently someone got the Rona, so there won't be. But as when bowl season starts, and technically it's supposed to, we go to our friend Andy Williams because of what this time of year is.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling
this makes me happy.
Yeah. It can't be slow.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Gotta love it. Always what we play, the most wonderful time of the year when bowl season starts. So Saturday, we're going to have the final games of the regular season. There's going to be some other miscellaneous Big Ten, Pac-10, or Pac-12, whatever games, but conference title games. And the CFP announcement on Sunday means that we will be in the most wonderful time of the year.
Right.
And have all the bowl matchups set, which we will break down on next week.
Right.
Let's recap the CFP rankings right now. Alabama 1, Notre Dame 2, Clemson 3, and Ohio State 4. And right. I saved Notre Dame-Clemson for this discussion, and because okay. I obviously know that is going to be a conference title game we have to play here.
Yeah, right.
So, but I wanted to save it for this part of the show because it takes on some special meaning. A&M is 5, Iowa State 6, Florida is 7. I think if you get to Iowa State, that's about as deep as I can see this going.
Are you outraged that Florida is only 7? Should they be lower in your opinion? Because there are a lot of people who...
They beat Georgia.
Exactly.
Then they should be ahead of Georgia.
The way the committee sees this is... You can't be ranked below Georgia because you beat Georgia. And you beat them convincingly, too. I think they're not seeing it as you lost to LSU. They're seeing it as you beat Georgia.
I don't think Iowa State's better than Florida.
Oh, God.
No way. No chance.
But I think the committee is going off of you are better than this team, but you're not as good as this team. That's the way I see it. I don't see it as they don't look at it like the computers used to as, you know, okay, you have this many wins, you're here. Then why are there only two lost teams in the top 10? And why is Coastal down at 12? Like, you know, like, if that's the way we... It's not the way where the old system is, then let's put Coastal at 4 then.
First, let's also run that the CFP rankings below, like, 7 or 8 are complete nonsense and make no sense. Okay?
Coastal
Carolina is 12th.
After beating Troy by 5 points.
Right. They're the 46th best team in the country, according to the
our boy Jeff Sagarin.
All right? No effing chance...
Right.
Coastal Carolina beats any of those teams above them, with the possible exception of Cincinnati. But even then, I would still say Cincinnati. Oh, touchdown, Josh Jacobs, you're in luck. The Chanticleers being ranked 12th is ridiculous. Again, we went over the resume last time, but let's recap it for you non-believers, all right?
No, for the believers who love them.
They have one top 20 win all year against a Sagarin opponent. That's against number 17 BYU, is equally a fraud. Their other win over their top 50 opponent is Louisiana, who they scraped by 3. That's the only other win. Every one of their other wins is ranked 60th or below, and that's App State at 60, Troy at 95, Georgia Southern 90, Texas State 128, South Alabama 126, Georgia State 101, Arkansas State 115. Oh, but they beat a Big Ten school. 129, Kansas, and then my favorite team, the Fighting Camels of Campbell at 196. Don't tell me Coastal belongs in the playoff. Don't tell me they belong in a New Year's Six game. They don't deserve it. They didn't play a better schedule than NDSU plays on a regular basis.
Can I play a game with you called Could Coastal Beat Them?
The answers are going to be no to a lot of these.
Okay. USC.
No.
Northwestern.
No.
North Carolina.
Nope.
Iowa.
Nope.
BYU.
Nope.
Miami.
Nope.
Louisiana.
Well, they're going to find out.
Texas.
No.
Oklahoma State.
No.
NC State.
Maybe.
Tulsa.
Maybe.
San Jose State.
Yes.
Colorado.
Maybe.
Indiana.
No.
Oklahoma.
Nope. Cincinnati. None of the teams above them. You can go that whole list. Let me tell you who else is on that list that can beat them, and that's not ranked in the CFP right now. Wisconsin, 12th in the Sagarin. Auburn, 13th. LSU, 19th. Oregon, 21. Arizona State, 22. TCU 23, Penn State 24, Utah 26, Washington 27, UCF 28, UCLA 30. All the teams I just read to you are not ranked in the CFP top 25, but are ranked in the top 30 of the Sagarin. Don't sit there and tell me Coastal will beat any of these teams.
I'm not saying they will.
They don't deserve to be in the playoff. Now, you can make the argument that the Group of Five should have its own playoff. I get it. But until they do, don't tell me this fraudulent bullshit about them being in a playoff or a New Year's Six Bowl. They haven't beaten the requisite teams to do it, and they don't deserve it because of the competition they played.
Right.
Let me tell you about Alabama here quickly. And you don't need to know how you don't need me to convince you how good Alabama is.
We know.
They beat every team on their schedule by double digits.
That includes Texas A&M.
Every team on their schedule is a top 50 Sagarin opponent. Two of them, Georgia and A&M, are top 10. Arkansas is 44th.
Really?
They beat them by 49 points.
Okay, never mind.
The toughest game they had all year against Ole Miss, they scored 63 points, and it wasn't close. Okay? In that game, they gave up 48. All right.
One of the first games of the season.
Bit of an aberration. Okay. They beat Missouri by 19. They beat A&M, who's the fifth-ranked team in the country, by 28.
Right.
They beat Georgia by 17, and it could have been worse.
Right.
They beat Tennessee by 31. They beat Mississippi State by 41. They beat Kentucky by 60. They beat Auburn by 29 in a rivalry game. They beat the defending national champions by 38. And they beat Arkansas by 49. I don't care if they lose this game 45-0 against Florida. They're in. They are absolutely 100% in.
That begs the question with Florida. If they beat Bama, are they in?
No.
Really?
Nope.
Okay.
They didn't. Because they've lost two games. And two losses, you're out. I'm sorry, but
if they beat the number one team in the country, what does that say?
Doesn't matter, but you lost to the number five team in the country.
Okay.
And you lost and then you lost to a team that isn't even ranked in the CFP. The committee isn't going to take a loss to a non-ranked CFP opponent. Now, as I just mentioned, LSU is a top 20 Sagarin rating team. We all know this. Keep in mind, too, this year, everyone, that when you look at the records of these teams in, like, the SEC and the Big 12 and all these conferences that have played 10 or 11 games, remember that they don't have the three cupcakes. All right? The SEC always has, like, some Southern Conference school that they destroy, like the Citadel or somebody like
Western
that, right?
Kentucky, yeah, they always have some school.
They always have, like, a Sun Belt opponent on there. Like, and why do you think the Sun Belt record the teams are looking better this year? Because they didn't get their ass kicked three times for guaranteed games.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
They didn't.
Right.
And that's got to be considered why teams like Coastal are 10-0. You know why? Because they're not 7-3. Because they didn't get their ass kicked by Alabama or Florida or Georgia.
Or LSU.
Or LSU. Okay? Now, that being said, Notre Dame, if you look at their schedule, yeah, they have some crap wins
on
there.
Well, that's most of their
Duke,
schedule.
Duke, South Florida, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Syracuse.
They beat Clemson.
They beat Clemson.
So I will give them all the respect in the world.
They beat a top 20 Carolina team.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be overlooked.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And they are going to have two wins over top 20 opponents.
Right.
Regardless of whether they win or lose.
Right.
Okay. I think Notre Dame's in. Regardless of what happens, unless they get the 45 donut type score.
Right.
And I just don't think Notre Dame is that bad.
I don't think they are that bad because they won the first time. But sometimes it's good if you lose the first time. I know it's a cliche, but sometimes it's better when you lose the first time. Because then you know what you've been wrong and you know what you can improve. And also, no one mentions this, Clemson had a couple defensive starters out for that game.
Well, and Trevor Lawrence was
out. And Lawrence, exactly. So that's going to help Clemson a lot when they have all of their start, when they're full, they're a complete healthy team right now.
Now,
when they went this off.
So let's talk about Clemson, who has one of those crap wins against the Citadel that I mentioned.
Right.
And they beat Syracuse and Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech and BC and all the crap stuff. So they don't have a win on their resume that's better than Miami right now.
Right. And who's now 18.
So if I was going to rank their schedule in terms of strength of victory, Ohio State and Penn State are Ohio State beat Penn State and Indiana, both top 25 in the Sagarin.
Right.
And even though they've only played five games, now if they win the sixth,
they pass the eye test.
Northwestern is 25th. So they'll have three top 25 wins, realistically, against, you know, three top 25 wins. Clemson doesn't even have one.
Right.
But they will if they beat Notre Dame.
Right.
So if Clemson wins, they're in. If they win 45-0, I think you've got some questions about Notre Dame, but I think they're still in.
Yeah. But if Clemson loses, who's in?
If Clemson loses, they're out. Yep, that's right. Two losses, right. And they're done.
Right.
Then, assuming, and we're, for all purposes here, we are assuming
Ohio State wins.
That Ohio State defeats Northwestern. I certainly can't imagine a scenario where Northwestern wins that game. But I'm not going all Joey Galloway here and talking about the Fighting Reese Davises and underestimating them. I am realistic, though, that I think Ohio State is the most substantive favorite of the weekend, even a bigger favorite than Alabama is in this series. If there's a stumble by Alabama, they're in. If there's a stumble by Notre Dame that isn't 45-0, they're in.
Yeah.
If Ohio State doesn't stumble, they're in. Notre Dame-Clemson is that kind of game, though, that if I'm betting money, I'm betting Notre Dame to cover, but right. I'm betting Clemson to win.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. But here's my question to you. If Ohio State and Clemson lose, then what happens? Because then all hell breaks loose if those two teams somehow lose.
Let's stipulate that A&M will beat Tennessee.
Right. Yep,
I think is a pretty safe assumption.
We can safely say that, yes.
But, I mean, I'm going to guess based on...
Tennessee has no shot in hell in that game.
Well, I wouldn't say they have no shot in hell, but it's unlikely. They're 14-point underdogs. Not likely. The other component you have to look at here, though, Clemson's a 10.5-point favorite. I would bet Notre Dame plus the 10.5,
right,
first of all.
I would too, yeah.
Now, assuming A&M wins, I think they're an automatic jump into the field over Clemson.
Okay.
I think then it'll be interesting to see where they get seeded
for.
I think it has to be four.
Here's the problem with that, though. They're going to get their ass kicked by Alabama.
And they already have. It was 52-28.
And the people saying, it might change. It's not going to change. Bama's beating everybody by double digits.
But Notre Dame, Ohio State would honestly be a fun game to watch. I'd like to see that game.
Buffalo Bills backup versus a Jacksonville Jaguars starter. Right. It'll be an NFL
matchup for years to come.
Right. Yeah. Josh Allen.
Let's say Clemson wins.
Yep.
And Ohio State loses. A&M's in. A&M's in with if Clemson loses or Ohio State loses and A&M wins. If both Clemson and Ohio State lose.
Is it too crazy? Is it crazy to say that A&M and Iowa State both get in?
Well, that's the kicker with Iowa State. Iowa State will have a third win against the top 12 opponent.
But two
losses.
Right. Yep. Right.
So they'll beat Oklahoma twice, and they'll have beaten Texas, assuming Texas stays at that point in the rankings.
Right.
Could it be conceivable that Iowa State could get in from the sixth spot? USC's too far back, and I don't think anybody respects anybody they've beaten, so I don't think so.
I can't take USC seriously.
It won't be Oklahoma.
No.
It won't be Cincinnati, and it won't be Georgia or Florida either. No. Even if Florida wins the title game,
I think it would be close. They might be 5 or 6, but I don't think they would get in.
It'd be interesting if it gets to total chaos and two teams drop out. I don't think that's going to happen. Betting man, I don't think any of the honestly. Here's my scenario for the weekend. Alabama wins easily. Notre Dame loses a close one to Clemson.
Right.
And Ohio State wins.
Crushes.
Notre Dame drops down to the 4 line, gets Alabama. Clemson and Ohio State move up a spot each.
And they play each other again.
So you're going to have Alabama. My prediction is Alabama, Notre Dame, and then Clemson, Ohio State.
I get it. You don't want to see that matchup a third time, but God, I would.
Notre Dame, Clemson?
Yes.
Let's see how Saturday goes.
Right. If it's a close game, I think they just flip-flop spots. I mean, really. I can't see you putting Notre Dame at 4. I can't.
I don't think they're going to seed a undefeated Big Ten champion below a one-loss conference runner-up.
Right, but
That's what Notre Dame would be, a one-loss conference runner-up.
I'm saying that Ohio State would be the 4 if they win or lose. And if they lose, if they win, they should stay at 4. I'm saying if Notre Dame loses a three-point thriller.
Ohio State is guaranteed to move up one spot if Clemson loses.
But can you... Right, right. But let's say Notre Dame, they lose by three... If they lose by, let's say Notre Dame loses by 3 points, are they still the four seed?
Yes.
I can't. I think Notre Dame's a better football team than Ohio State.
I just don't think for purposes of matchups, people are not going to want to see
the matchup. Well, I want to see the four best teams play each other.
Here's the only difference: if that game in Charlotte on Saturday is anything like the game they played in South Bend,
yeah,
people want to see that a third time.
Right.
If it's 47-40 double overtime. People will love to see that one again. But is that within the spirit of the CFP that they want a team to play a third time?
I would. What's the best two matchups? Ohio State, Alabama.
I just don't. Before. I don't think for TV it will be realistic.
Screw the TV.
You can't, because that's the only thing you get now is that it on TV. You don't have fans. You don't have a bowl atmosphere. You have to have TV.
Give me one of the best matchups possible.
And that's good.
It's like the hit best overall in Madden.
I've seen it already.
So
I've seen it twice. I want to see somebody different.
We've seen NFL playoffs.
I'm just giving you what my opinion is.
I get it. I'm giving you mine.
So what's your four then? What's
okay.
Like? You lay out. I told you how I think it's
going. Assuming everybody wins, the way it is right now, chalk holds the way it is. If everybody wins, then that's exactly what.
But Notre Dame or Clemson, someone's got to lose. Who loses?
Notre Dame loses. They're the three.
Okay, so you think it? You realistically think it's going to be Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State?
Right.
No way.
Okay, that's my opinion.
A&M is
in. I would want to see that matchup a third time.
A&M is in. They need Clemson to lose. A&M are wearing Irish green and gold this weekend.
Right.
A&M needs them to win. Iowa State needs a miracle. They are going to have Ohio State lose to have any chance to get into the mix.
Right.
Unless it's 45-0 Clemson, in which case I still think Notre Dame is in, but it's going to be close with A&M.
Right.
So that's my thought. So, yeah,
but I know your opinion that doesn't. You don't want to say matchup a third time.
Won't happen.
I would. The way they played the first time, why the hell wouldn't I want to see that matchup again?
Well, let's see if the second time is different.
And what? Okay, let me put it to you this way. If it's the exact same game, would you want to see it a third time?
Yes. Does it mean it's going to happen?
No. Nope. If it's 35-32 Clemson in regulation, would you want to see it again?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not saying, Grant, I don't want to see it happen. I'm just saying they won't do it.
I get that. But if it's close to the same game, but it's in regulation, not two overtimes.
Doesn't matter.
I just think that I would like to see that a third time. It's better than having... I think Notre Dame and Alabama will be a good game.
Alabama is by far superior to anybody. They are at least a touchdown favorite over any of the contenders I just mentioned.
They said that in the first playoff, too, and that didn't work out.
I think this year is a little different.
Right.
I think the domination Alabama has shown this year is at a different level.
I didn't think they would be as good as they usually were this year.
I don't think we all thought Mac Jones was going to be that good.
No, either. I thought Mac Jones would be like your Jake Coker. He would be. He'd be okay.
Yeah, he'd be great. He'd be a caretaker quarterback, but he has gone out
with
and made
ungodly talent around
and
him.
Made plays.
But
so.
Mac Jones has played really well this year, and I'm happy for him. But it's okay. Who wins the Heisman? I'm just wondering who wins that Heisman. Because it's a wide open race.
It is, but Mac Jones, honestly, I think he may have a good chance. But I think the kid from Alabama, the receiver, might have an even better chance if he has another game like he's had. I don't think you can give it to Kyle Trask.
Trask was the front runner.
Well, then you had the fraudulent ones like Zach Wilson and that kind
of stuff.
Yeah,
he's gone. I thought Trask had it before the LSU game. Now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
No. He didn't bring his team back to win, and that's such a key distinction in the Heisman race that you have to have that.
Right.
So I don't think he's going to be that guy.
So if you give me a top three, what would you get?
Top three what?
A top three for the Heisman.
Oh, well.
Again, it's a quarterback driven league. We all know this. So is Mac Jones the front runner?
I don't know if he's a front runner, but I think Devontae Smith is. If you're going to ask me who's going to win who I would vote for,
if you had a vote.
I'm absolutely voting for Devontae Smith right now.
Who is your two and three?
Mac Jones is my two, and probably I'd put Trask no higher than my third.
Right.
Right. I think, unfortunately for Trevor Lawrence, I think the being gone cost him.
You don't think Fields is in this at all?
No. Nope. Not enough games.
Okay.
Not enough games. The thing about Fields that I don't understand, that it's just, it's not possible for him to get into that role. It's not. And just because he hasn't played enough.
Okay.
And that's the only reason. It's not,
okay.
I don't know, a personal thing against him. I don't have a knock on his ability. It's just not enough games.
If Fields played 10 games, if he beat Heisman.
Impossible to say.
If he did.
You know what? If Michael Penix had played 10 games, he would be getting votes.
Would he get votes?
He was that good.
Right.
He was absolutely that good. And if you look at him without, the team without him is a whole different deal. So, we got to move on.
Right.
We are way over time. We're going to run over on this show.
Who cares?
But we got to talk about the National Football League. We got to move fast. We are on the Chargers tonight. Although it is 17-17 in the third quarter, late. Chargers knocking on the door. Chargers plus the 3.5 was our pick. Raiders have got some issues on defense tonight, but they're hanging in there.
No, but Darren Waller and Josh Jacobs scored, so my fantasy.
So fantasy team, we're all right. The Chargers are literally on the 1 yard line as we speak.
There was a
pass interference penalty that drove it down to the 1 on an outright mugging by the Raiders secondary, and that is a touchdown right there for I believe that was Kalen Ballage that scored.
Kalen Ballage.
So he scores. So again, our upset here, 3.5. We talked about it with Rob from Minneapolis earlier tonight. He was asking for some advice on who to go. I said Raiders secondary is decimated and not looking good. And of course, the Chargers may still find a way to screw this game up.
Oh, they will.
But
we'll
see how it goes. We've got an interesting set of games this weekend here, Grant. We've got a Saturday slate, so we'll start with those two games.
I hate Saturday.
Bills are -6 at the Broncos.
Oh, stop there.
Bills are 10-3, Broncos 5-8. You know what bothers me about the Bills is their defense is kind of meh.
But according to King Colin!
But Colin!
Okay. He's got Buffalo beating Kansas City, so...
No.
Yeah, no.
Bridge too far.
Yeah, right. There's another river to cross, and he ain't crossing that
no.
river.
Broncos have any chance in this one?
No.
Okay.
No.
We'll take the Bills
As long as no offense for the touchdown, we're good.
We take the Bills -6. We're both on that.
Correct.
Panthers at the Packers in the nightcap on NFL
Stop
Network.
Stop there, Packers.
Panthers, or Packers 8.5-point favorite, 51.5. By the way, I'll take the over in the Bills. Take the under in the Bills game. I'll take the over in this one. Packers have the second-ranked offense in the NFL, and they're rolling. Sounds like Christian McCaffrey will not play this game again, Grant, so I don't have much faith in the Panthers being able to go in there and pull off an upset.
Is this a bad fantasy on my part to have Rodgers starting over Mahomes this week?
Because the Saints' defense is pretty good, and if you got those two choices to make, I would start Rodgers, too.
Which I did. So.
Yeah, I think that's a smart play.
But
so we're both on the
fancy
Packers -8.5.
Yeah,
we Packers. Go to the Sunday slate, Bucks -6 at the Falcons. Bucks don't exactly light it up on offense.
No, but Buccaneers.
But last week, do you think the Bucks still win, even if Bailey makes all those kicks? It's a different game.
Yes, because who's their quarterback? Tom Brady.
He's good.
And Brady's going to make some comeback because the Vikings have never beaten Tom Brady in his entire career. There's the Pats and there's the Bucks.
They may never either.
They may never beat him, and that will probably never happen, at least in my lifetime.
The Falcons just don't have the defense, I think, to compete in. And
they
I
got
know
the offense.
They certainly have a decent offense, although it's not much better than the Bucks when you look at it by yardage.
Yep.
But the Bucks' defense is better. The Falcons' defense isn't. Right. I'm going to take the Bucks -6.
As well.
Okay. We'll take the over on that at 49.5. 49ers go into Dallas, a 3-point favorite with an over-under of 45. 49ers have a decent defense. They just don't have anything on offense, although you'd be surprised to learn that they're in the middle of the pack offensively in the league.
Which shocks me, but Dallas, they beat up on the Bengals last week. Who cares? It's the Bengals. But I like San Francisco more. If Mullen doesn't turn the ball over, they'll be okay.
You could make a good case for the Cowboys as a pick here at +3, but I can't find it. I think the 49er defense, I think the 49ers, even without the ability of you know, Jimmy Garoppolo in there to steer the offense. I think they're still good enough defensively to take this on and win. Give me the 49ers minus the three.
Yeah, Niners.
You as
Niners,
well?
Yeah.
Okay. Titans go and have a matchup with the Lions. We'll see how the Lions look in a game like this. The problem with Detroit here is that they're just so bad defensively. They are 29th in the league in defense, 29th in the league in rush defense. The Titans come in with a number two ranked rushing offense and a whole lot of Derrick Henry. In this one, to me, I'm thinking that it's going to be an easy win for the Titans, probably with an 11-point cover grant. It's probably going to be that way. I just don't see this being much of a contest otherwise. Grant, what do you think? Any hesitation picking the Titans?
Titans.
Okay.
Just take the Titans. Titans win this game. Clear, cut and dry. Let's go.
Texans going to Indianapolis. The Colts are minus 7.5 in this one. You know I have a big thing again for teams ranked both the top 10 offense and defense. Colts are in it. Colts have a number 9 ranked offense, number 6 ranked defense. Texans are horrible at running the football. Their offense is very good. They're dead last in rushing. I just don't see them putting up much of a threat here. I don't like 7.5. I wish the number was a 7, but I'll still take the Colts minus a 7.5 and the under.
You took the word out of my mouth, Colts. I mean, the Texans, I feel bad for Deshaun Watson because the Texans have ruined his career, and it's pretty clear because he's a top 10 quarterback in this league. He's a top 5 quarterback in this league. But the Texans have just screwed him over by trading away his top target. He doesn't have a running back. Sorry, David Johnson, but you're not another one running back. They just don't have enough around him. And J.J. wants to leave after this season. He might go to Pittsburgh. Who knows? But we just don't know what's going to happen to Houston.
Yeah, it'll blow up.
Yeah.
Patriots at 6-7 travel to the Dolphins at 8-5. These teams are the most meh of the grouping this weekend.
If Miami wants to make the playoffs, they got to win this game.
Dolphins are a 3-point favorite. Both these offenses are bottom tier.
Well, the
Patriots defense is actually a top 10 defense. Problem is, I don't think the Patriots offense can score. This is going to be, first of all, it's a certainty we're going to bet the under.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the Dolphins minus the 3 because I just don't trust New England's ability to score in a late spot.
I'm taking the Dolphins mainly because I think their defense is really good and the fact that Cam can't score on anybody. So, Dolphins.
Strangest matchup of the weekend. Seahawks at 9-4 travel to the Washington football team at 6-7.
Yeah.
Seahawks are 5.5-point favorites and over-under 44.5.
Mm.
Here's the strangest stat in this game. Seahawks have the 6th-ranked offense in football and the 27th-ranked defense. They are the worst passing defense in football. They're 32nd against the pass. And, Washington doesn't have a quarterback. But they're the 30th ranked offense. So you've got both teams' strengths go against each other. The Washington defense is 4th in the league.
Against the Seahawks offense.
Which is 6th in the NFL.
Right.
So you have the irresistible force meets the immovable object game, which we'll get to later with Chiefs Saints.
Right.
Seahawks have already shown that this kind of game is tough for them.
Right. But here's my problem with the Reds. With the football team.
We don't know if Alex Smith's going to play.
I don't think he will. And
they don't have Antonio Gibson at full health either.
Right, and that's why I'm picking Seattle. Because I like Seattle. I like Washington's defense. I think it's great. But you need some points to back that up. And I just can't. I can't spot him 17 points in this game because if you score 17 points, you're going to win most football games.
Despite the fact that I'm behind by 2 games, I still can't reach far enough to make Washington the pick here.
If I'm in your shoes, I wouldn't take
them. I don't think they could score enough to win this game.
Take
we'll take the Seahawks minus a 5.5 and the under. Jaguars-Ravens, minus 13. The Ravens are
47. Can we say Ravens and move on?
Yeah, we don't need to. Jaguars are terrible. Lamar Jackson, because he doesn't need to take a shit during the game, should be able to handle this one. Another game we'll spend all of 10.
Lamar, eat bananas. You'll be okay.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S, bananas. Also, a game we're not going to spend much time on, Rams, minus 17.5 over the Jets.
Again, who's scheduled? What the other Jets get?
Jets have the worst offense, worst passing offense, 30th ranked defense. The Rams are top five in offense and the number one defense.
Stop there, Rams.
Rams set minus 17.5 on the under. Cover. Not, that should be all right. Eagles at the Cardinals. Cardinals minus 6 with 49.5. Cardinals come into this game at 7-6 and in the driver's seat for the NFC playoff spot. Can Jalen Hurts catch lightning in the bottle again, Grant?
Can he? Maybe, but as much as I want to pick the Eagles just to see the Vikings make a playoff berth, the Vikings don't deserve it, so I'll pick the Cardinals.
Right. Realistically speaking, I think this is a game where Kyler Murray is going to have a nice day. I think this will put the Eagles out of it. The Eagles' defense is decent, but their offense still
is. If Hurts wins, I wouldn't be shocked.
No.
Because he's played really well last week, but I can't see it.
Don't see it happening. We'll save the Chiefs Saints for a minute. Let's go to a Sunday night. Browns Giants. Browns minus 4.5 in this one. Browns are a terrible team against the spread. They're 5-8 against the number this year. Offensively, though, they certainly did not slow down against Baltimore. Giants' offense is terrible. I don't care who's at quarterback, and I think that's going to be ultimately what does them in here. Even though the Giants' defense is good, I don't know how big that is. I'm going to take the Browns minus the 4.5 at New York on this one.
Yep. If the Browns win, they're in the playoffs, in my opinion, because of who's behind them.
Yep.
And I think they have made much better records than almost every single team behind them.
Right.
I'm taking the Browns.
We'll spend all of 30 seconds on this one. Steelers minus 13 against the Bengals.
Stop there, Steelers.
Even though the Steelers are in a tailspin, they're the 23rd ranked offense in the league. That's, you know, considering what they have for talent, that's unacceptable.
They have the opposite of the Roma. They have the dropsies.
Problem is they're playing the Bengals, who are awful. They beat them 36-10 a few weeks ago. The Steelers did with Joe Burrow at quarterback. Without Joe Burrow, it could get uglier. The Steelers defense is third in the NFL.
Yep.
Easy pick here. Steelers minus a 13 and the under against the Bengals. Premier games of the weekend. Obviously, we know that Chiefs-Saints is a huge game.
Right.
Chiefs 12-1 at 10-3 Saints. Taysom Hill will quarterback this weekend.
And that is why I lose this game,
right.
Kansas City.
Chiefs have the number one offense in the league. Saints have the number two defense in the league. Even though the Chiefs' D is not elite, it is good enough.
It's Taysom Hill.
Yeah, and all it takes is a couple possessions to fall behind.
No, we saw what the Eagles did to him.
Yep.
If you make Taysom throw the football, he's not as accurate as Drew. You can't throw the ball as well as Drew Brees.
Yep.
I don't care what people say about Taysom Hill. He's a great runner. You got to be more than a runner to win this game.
The Eagles are a bottom tier offense and move the ball on the Saints and beat them.
It will.
Mahomes will have. Now, Tyreek Hill, there's a little bit of an issue with a hammy. He might not be at full strength.
That doesn't.
But I still think that's going to be enough. We'll see if there's any letdown in the Chiefs. And if the Saints lose this game, they may be done as far as the number one seed.
Yeah.
If the Packers, as we assume, are going to win.
They don't deserve it.
Because then they're going to be one game back of the Packers with two to play. And they lose the tiebreaker because of that game earlier. So, deep shit for the Saints right here if they lose this game. We're both on the Chiefs at minus three on this one, and the over at 51.5.
Yep.
I think they'll crush that. The Vikings, last but not least, 6-7 and hosting the Bears at 6-7. Vikes are a 3-point favorite with a 47 over under, so essentially home field advantage gives them this one. Vikings have, believe it or not, a top 10 offense.
That doesn't surprise me.
They run the ball as well as anybody. They're sixth in the league. Their defense is obviously has a lot to be desired.
But that's
problem is the Bears can't take advantage of that because they have the 28th ranked offense in the league.
Well, they played well last week, but
against Detroit, who, may I remind you, has the 29th ranked defense.
Didn't they play Houston last week?
Well, didn't they beat Detroit?
They played Houston last week.
Well, okay, Houston.
Yeah.
Houston has the 31st ranked defense in the league. They can play fine against shit defenses.
Right.
Vikings at least are a step above shit defense. Not real far, but enough.
They're not shit, but they're at the toilet defense.
But I don't think Mitch Trubisky is going to go out there and light it up even like that. Vikings had a tough time running the ball against the Bears in the last game. I'm not sure that repeats itself here.
That depends on Akeem Hicks. Does he play? If he plays...
Does it matter?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. Vikes, I don't know if they have all the tight ends back, but...
For the end of the season, it doesn't matter.
No, but I think the Vikings are good enough here to win. I'll take them minus the three.
Yeah.
And the under.
As much as I don't want to, I'm going to have to. I mean, just because I trust them more than I trust the Bears winning this.
Right. And trust them, the word trust in the Bears
doesn't work.
Go hand in hand in any way, shape, or form. We are. We apologize for having to run through the NFL picks at the end rather briefly, but there was a lot to get to tonight and some things we didn't even get to. Monday, it will be a packed show, to say the least. We will be breaking down all of the NFL playoff picture. We will have the complete college football picture, and we will start, I presume, picking bowl games.
Right.
Just for programming purposes, we do plan. We will have a show on Christmas Eve for you. So look forward to that. It will be a little lighter than our normal ones.
Right.
But we will have Full Tilt Monday, and then we will be on Thursday with a podcast at some point during the day. So for those of you that are traveling and everything, you can tune us in on the drive to Grandma's house if that be the case. In our case, that's a very short trip to Grandma's house.
Right.
But nevertheless, it is going to be a short trip to Grandma's house. Hey, get in touch with the show. Our email is legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. That's legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @legendloudmouth. That's @legendloudmouth. And check out our website, legendandloudmouth.com. That's legendandloudmouth.com for all the links to our previous shows and why Coastal Carolina sucks. Grant, how do we find you?
Follow me on Instagram and Snapchat @GrantLegend. Follow me on TikTok @GrantLegend. Follow us on Instagram @LegendEarthClimbUpFromTheSkullPod. That's LegendEarthClimbUpFromTheSkullPod. If you like the show, hate the show, but care, please subscribe to the YouTube channel.
As we mentioned, a lot going on next week in terms of sports. That is truly why it's the most wonderful time of the year. As we count down to Christmas with a week to go, we hope you enjoy your weekend. We hope you get all your last-minute Christmas shopping done, and we hope that you are able to make all your Christmas cookies. We are volunteering to quality control taste test any of your cookies.
Right.
Just let us know, Legend and Alarm.
And I may steal a couple of them.
Right, you might. But for every two that he gets, I get three. That's the rule.
No.
Okay, more to talk about that one later.
Yeah.
Hey, have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next time on Legend and Alarm.